Okay, good morning, and thank you for being here at this time and at this day. I think it's a bit too early, but I'm glad you're here. So you all have... Okay, so first, who hasn't heard of DI Days? Otherwise, I have to give more context. Okay, so I will give that context first, and then I will talk about the why and what of this talk. So Digital Independence Days have been started at the Chaos Computer Congress in December 2025, and it's this whole movement around getting people away from the evil big tech and the US big tech, and the idea is just that we once a month have this event where we go to sit together and just do a small move, like going from WhatsApp to an alternative messaging client or something like that. So that's the iDays for those who haven't heard of those. Great. Okay, so we have been doing them in Karlsruhe too, and it has been a lot of fun, and I think there has been some positive impact, and we had a lot of lessons learned, and we also talked here at the GPN about what we learned and what worked and what didn't. But at the same time, I'm like interested in like utopian thinking, creating better worlds, and there's a lot of gaps in what the DI days try to promise and what they really do, and also what I and many, hopefully others also want the world to be like, maybe. And so I was thinking that, well, there's a tendency in anarchist thinking that you recognize anarchy in a lot of things that aren't anarchy. And that there is the idea that you can basically shift the world one small step at a time with anarchist thinking and anarchist practicing. So there's not really a difference between thinking and doing in anarchy. And so the idea was a bit, okay, can we apply anarchism to the iDays? So the first obvious thing I realized when I published this at the Easter Hack, posted the request to do this talk at GPN, is that, well, the first part is not true at all, obviously. The iDays are not anarchist at all. They're very much, what is it called? They're democratic citizen thing, bürgerlich, I don't know. But at the same time, anarchy exists in everything, in little small seeds, and maybe we can make the iDays work better if we apply this kind of thinking to it. So first, I want to give a short introduction what I think anarchy is, that is not aligned with what everyone else thinks anarchy is, because anarchy is a lot of individuals thinking different things. There's some small relations that there's like a critique of power and stuff like that, but then there are also anarcho-capitalists, which it's very questionable if they are anarchists. So let's just talk about anarchy by looking at what other people think anarchy is, so you don't have to trust me. So I think that's a nice quote from an anarchist convention in 2026, or was it 2025? It says 2026, so yeah, I believe that. So anarchy is when everyone feels good. I think that kind of like is this utopian thinking behind anarchy. It's basically this total inclusive world where everyone is heard, no matter their anything, their identity, right? That no matter who you are and where you live, there's like this international solidarity and this praxis that no one is ignored. Then at the same time, it's utopian, but it's also very much destructive. This is basically a meme in left-wing circles. We will make total destroy was said by some Greek anarchists at some convention. And the idea behind that is basically that anarchism has positive creation, as like you see in the first quote, but it also has this urge for destruction, and destruction is very much seen as a positive trait in anarchism. That's, I think, something Bakunin specifically also stated, who was one of the earlier anarchist theorists. And the idea is that we have to, to create a better world, we first have to destroy all previous social and technological and state relations that basically bind us to the current world. And then more academically, but that's basically what the left type of anarchy believes, is that we want a society that's free of coercion and coercive institutions, so free of vertical power structures that force us into something we might not want as individuals, and that once these relations don't exist, that humanity can be free. So that's kind of the idea behind anarchism, and how do anarchists get there? It's by their actions. And one of the most important parts said by Gustav Landauer, who comes here also from Karlsruhe, and well, it's long dead, obviously, is that unlike other left-wing currents, like for example Marxists, there's a strong belief in that if your means don't align with your goals, so are not colored in the same color, then you already lost, basically. So if we want to achieve a goal, our way to get there already has to be the goal. So we don't really differentiate between the goal and how we get there. And another part that's more from like an anarcho-feminist perspective is anarchism is about action, it's about direct action, but specifically it's not just any direct action. So just bombing cars is not anarchism. It's only anarchism when it also prefigures this alternative world. And what that means, prefiguration, is that we realize these new social structures that we want in the future in the old world, so in the current world, in the shell of the old. So basically our action always has to kind of try to create what we want now. So it's not preparing for a future revolution, it's the revolution as a continuous process. I think that's the big difference to like maybe a Marxist perspective, where you have a vanguard that prepares for this inevitable fight overthrowing the capital. Yeah, you're right, sorry, thank you. Yeah, it's Marxist-Leninist thinking that does that with the vanguardism. Yes. You're right, Marxists theory is also used by anarchists. Thank you. No, you're right. It's an important technical difference. And then again by Gustav Landauer, but I think that's like the key of how anarchists act and what they attempt to do is that they understand that the state and capital kind of configures how social relations between people work, but also technology does that too, and that to change our world, we have to first change how we relate to each other. And to do that, we have to destroy how we relate currently to each other. So to get towards horizontal power structures, we first have to eliminate vertical power structures. And then going into very much this small a anarchy, so the very practical applied anarchism, which often people don't consider real anarchy, is, well, how do you organize? How do you make this happen? And the principles behind that, that I also think we can sometimes see a little bit in how the IDEs work, is that we have three principles that are important to this kind of organizing. First, it's consensual, so every voice matters. A single person can basically block things from happening. So we don't do majority voting, or we don't have a single leader, but if a single person says, hey, I'm uncomfortable with this, this doesn't align with my interests, they have the ability to either leave freely, or they have the ability to block until the group as a whole finds a compromise that works for everyone. And then that there's no fixed thing, there's no fixed ideology, there's no fixed decisions, but that every decision that we make, every structure we create, every institution that kind of happens by accident or by purpose can be changed. And finally, that we are conscious of what we are doing, conscious of the power structures we create, because there is no real world without power, but we can always critically reflect on the power, be explicit about it existing, and then also be explicit about confronting it. So basically, in anarchist organizing, we want to have this conflict that when people overreach, overreach with how much authority they have, that they can be fought about it and change how they do things. Yeah, so that's anarchism, anarchy. And I want to kind of look now at the IDEs. and kind of going from this anarchist lens, basically see the positive things and the negative things. And for that, there's also last quote, sorry, that's the last quote, which I think is nice, it's beautiful in a way, is that anarchy already exists in our society, but it's a seed beneath the snow. So in our actions that we just do right now, for example, in the DDI days, there are also already these seeds that represent this kind of power-free world, this kind of utopia, but it's buried under, well, a lot of snow, a lot of nationalism, capitalism, colonialism, and basically every ism that's bad, yeah. And now the goal is kind of like to find these seeds and also find what's missing, basically the missing parts that are buried beneath the snow, and from that create a utopia and maybe identify what we can do differently. And yeah, for that, let's look at Digital Independence Days. So a first important realization, maybe also over the last few days for me, well, there is no true DI day first, just when we look at the internet already. There's at least two presentations for Digital Independence Days. On the left, you have this original one that started everything with the call out by Mark-Uwe Kling. And this one has kind of like a very strong alignment with corporate interests and basically works by having an expert council that actually comes from industry to kind of decide where it goes. There's not a lot of like alignment with community interests. But at the same time, it still moves towards an important goal of getting away from US big tech. And then on the other side, this is a bit newer, but they already hosted very early on the events website for the DI days. We have the iDay.org, which is something basically when this disagreement started between the chaos community and the original person that is hosting and maintaining the i.day website, I think that was the CCC Hamburg, they created this alternative website where they're basically saying, hey, we want this to be a community-led effort. We don't want to align with corporations. And basically now there are these two presences. Most people still know the left one. I think the Karlsruhe, yeah, we still use the whole design and everything from the left one. Or is it the right one from your perspective? No, it's the left one. Yeah. So there's no true DI day. And in a way, this is a good thing because there shouldn't be a central authority deciding, hey, this is the right way to do things and this is the wrong way to do things, because it very much matters on perspective. It matters on who you are trying to reach. And another nice thing about the DI days is that they are very much decentralized and everywhere. So in the next 30 days, there's apparently 1,500 DI days or DI day related events occurring, and most of them are in Germany and other parts of Central Europe, but there are also some in Portugal and even one in the United States. So that's cool, right? Like, there's no central authority saying, hey, you have to do DI days, but they're still happening. But at the same time, we can very much see this is a very Western phenomenon. So it hasn't reached most of the other world. And we should also look into that in a bit. And so I think even though there is like no true DI day, I think there's a common core of like values and principles and ways to get there, which mostly originate from the Mark-Uwe Kling talk, and there's like a general agreement. And I think the analysis that the DI days have in common is kind of like the very obvious thing that technology has power over society. But then it's like kind of established that, well, right now the power holders are the US monopolies, the tech oligarchs. And this power is mostly reached through the ability to control information, control media, basically control what everyone can see and how that kind of influences democratic processes. And the danger that comes from that is the authoritarian turn, which, well, the US tech oligarchs are, for example, also trying to get this kind of authoritarian rule and logic implemented in the EU. And the goal now from the DI days, as stated originally, and you can see on the website, is, well, it's to preserve the democracy, preserve the status quo by switching to the good side and away from US big tech, and also talk about it in a way to influence public discourse. So it's very much a reformist project where we try to make small steps to kind of go through our existing democratic processes to maintain, basically prevent it to further slipping into, well, fascism. And the means for that are relaxed rebellion, which means, yeah, just do these small events, one step at a time, talk about it on the internet, have a hashtag, and that's the DI Day logic. I think both websites, at least, and a lot of local DI Days agree on this kind of common purpose. And I think there's already a lot of problems in this, and I want to talk about that. So first, that's appropriate, we have to talk a bit about the whole logic of going away from US big tech. A lot of the recipes on the DI.day website suggest, oh yeah, you are hosting your stuff on AWS or Google Cloud or Azure, well, just go to one of these clouds, the Stacked Cloud or the Honest Cloud or something like that. And there's a lot of this kind of logic of the problem is specifically US big tech. And well, that's obviously not true, right? We can see that, for example, Schwarz-Digis has a strong influence on German politics. For example, in Baden-Württemberg, they are the, what is it called? They're offering a lot of the services to the German police, the Baden-Württemberg police. And they are collaborating together with the Baden-Württemberg government to create a new Palantir. And pretending that EU big tech is somehow better and more democratic is likely untrue, and we have to always be aware that the capitalist profit logic does not stop on borders. It's international, and it will try to influence our society to this kind of authoritarian thinking towards fascism, no matter if it's on good German land or not. The reason for why it is thought that EU big tech is better is, well, because we have different laws, our states are more democratic, and for example here, that's from the DI Day website, we have European general regulations like the General Data Protection Act, and also we are here in a democracy, so we can reform it to, like, we can influence it through political actions by just voting for the right party. And yeah, I don't think that's true. We have this digital omnibus, which basically tried to and will still try to weaken our data protection rights a lot. Basically, pseudonymized data does not fall under it anymore, and the data can be used to train AI models. And so the capital interests are already there. They're already trying to influence this legislation, and no matter how much public outcry there is, it won't help us. And I mean, maybe you have also noticed there are a lot of laws at the state and federal level in Germany now with the police laws, which are basically, yeah, let's do surveillance even better. It's basically the whole law situation to make tools like Palantir legal. And no matter if they are from the US or from Europe, it won't change that we are entering a surveillance state driven by these capitalist and authoritarian interests. So I think just preserving the status quo under the state, under capitalism as it is, probably not enough. Yeah, that's saying it weakly, I think. Or you can ask yourself if it's enough to just basically try to maintain things as they are, preserve our democracy versus advancing our democracy to maybe a better state. Yeah, and then there's also this whole question of what's a good side, especially in the context of technology use. I think we have to ask ourselves, as the IDE organizer specifically, whether we believe in ethics of technology and whether technology is value neutral. For example, this is again from the DI.day website, alternatives to ChatGPT and co. So I don't know, there's a lot of mixed feelings about AI, but we at least have to think about the extractive nature of AI and its environmental impacts, and then just being like, oh yeah, we are taking this technology that obviously is being used for problematic purposes and has problematic roots and just translating it to the EU. Is that right to do? Personally, I don't think so, but I also think that we are not maybe asking this question in the first place. I think we have to start at the root and ask what technologies do we even want to make independent? What technologies do we even want to use in the future? And maybe technologies like these we don't actually want at all. And then we have to maybe go away from the software level too and ask, do we need a world that's this digital? Digital technologies are based on a very colonialist, extractive supply chain. So every computer we use, every new device we buy, usually leads us at the root to forced labor and child labor. So maybe we have to ask ourselves at all, maybe instead of switching to digital alternatives, maybe we just want to stop using technology altogether. Obviously, I'm saying this here and I'm still using a computer, so I think there's maybe a medium somewhere between going back to the Stone Age and just translating everything. But I think a problem that we have as the iDay organizers is that at least that we try basically to answer every person that comes to our DI days, hey, I have this technology, how do I get it to work on Linux? Or is there an alternative? And we just say, yeah, we try to find the next closest thing. But we don't ask in the first place, okay, why do you need this? Or why do we need this as a society? And I think there's a lot of technologies that we don't need. And there is the question of maybe we can just go back to simpler technologies or just work on paper a bit more often. And I think also the iDays, how they work right now, maybe they're reproducing our current power structures. I think there is a huge problem of privilege in our current iDays. When I look at our iDays, and I mean this as no critique of the specific individuals there, I have to be very clear about it. I think it's great that they are there and working on this. But right now, who comes to our iDays, at least in Karlsruhe, white people that have education, that have money, that have the time to come to these events, that can handle maybe also the failure of their hardware breaking because we installed Linux wrongly. And right now it feels very much like, okay, yeah, you want alternative email providers. Yeah, you got to pay money for that. Oh, you want your data hosted on an independent cloud. Yeah, you got to pay for that. You also need to be educated enough to kind of be able to read the recipes, which are nicely written, but they're still somewhat technical. And you need the leisure time to learn the new technologies, and you need the leisure time to even do these switches every time. And then you need the capacity to handle failure. And speaking from myself as a neurodivergent person, a broken Linux sometimes ends up in me not using my computer for 2 weeks, and depending on who I am, this could be fatal, right? So I think right now, digital independence is very much this, we talk about it being working together, and in the local, the seat is nice, that we sit down together and help each other basically get a bit more independent. But in practice, it still means that every individual has to do these steps on their own, finance them on their own, do all this learning on their own, and it's still very much an effort that is maintained for the privileged. It kind of mirrors how being free of surveillance is a thing for the privileged. And those who cannot afford to protect themselves from surveillance or from technological dependence, well, they are fucked, and we are not currently doing anything, I think, about helping on that. And also something that we talked about yesterday is actually that we are very much limited in our international solidarity, basically, on not just where did the iDay spread, it's very much a Western phenomenon, but also that a lot of our solutions don't actually work in a lot of the world. Like when we look at OpenStreetMaps, if you go to, I talked to someone who was from India yesterday, and they were basically, yeah, OSM doesn't work in India, you can forget that. So it's kind of naive to just say, yeah, just do these things, they will free you. In most of the world, OSM contributors barely exist. That's basically what the map is showing here. And so I think a better world also involves that everyone, independent of where they live, have this independence from big tech, but in countries that are not the Western world, you will have to stay on US big tech just to be able to participate in the digital world and to benefit from these tools. And lastly, I think there's an important criticism that I saw online is that we are not really, well, I look at myself and I realize, oh yeah, I'm not actually thinking about accessibility at all when I do these switches. I don't think I have seen a single blind person, a single deaf person, a single wheelchair-bound person at any of these DI days. And if they had been there, I probably would have been really fucked because I wouldn't have known how to help them. And I don't think I have thought about it. And I don't think we ever talked about it as a group. Also, when we had this organization meeting on Friday, where the organizers for DI days met for an experience exchange, this was never mentioned. We didn't talk about this at all. So I don't think most of the alternative switches, especially these desktop programs, are usable if you have impairments very well, a lot of them. I don't think a lot of these are accessible for non-English speakers. Maybe they are translated into Western languages, but if you want to go into one of the many Arabic dialects, you are probably not having a good time. And I don't think we are currently making much of an effort to work together with marginalized groups. I hope that's different for other groups in this whole DI Day universe. But given that there was a big blind spot on Friday, and given that I realized just the last few days that there is not such an effort, maybe I'm not the most reflected person, actually. But yeah, I think this is a huge gap. And if we don't target this, we are just recreating these power structures that already exist, that marginalize people, and we just do it with open source technology. That's probably not what we want our world to be like. So we have critiqued a lot, and I don't want to end on a purely negative note, and I also said that now this was all the snow, and now I want to look at the seeds, and I want to look at what our utopia might look like. I think there is a lot of positive in our community. Otherwise, I don't think I would want to participate in it. And I think we already do some things that are creating this better world. I think, for example, these events like the Gulasch Programmiernacht, they are not perfect. I think they're also creating a lot of bad things, but I think at the same time, we also are here because we enjoy the kind of different way of living together, of coexisting, of interacting. And I also think that this is a more general thing in the free open source community, for example, or in the Fediverse, that we are trying to find new ways of relating to each other. So I think first, I mean, I talked a bit about it, but I think there are already these positive seeds just from the realization that how we have been doing things on the i.day with the corporate logic involved in it, with this very high focus on experts versus just a community-led effort, that's not a good thing. So there is already a positive change, and I think that's a good thing, that we go and we inform people, we make people sovereign users. No, I don't like that word. Autonomous users, by teaching them, but not preaching them, not telling them, hey, you have to do that, but here's what you can do, and maybe we can together find what will work for you. That we offer a lot of options so people can be enabled to make their own choices. That we focus now maybe on decentralized technology, not just moving to EU big tech. That we try to be more accessible, that this is even said specifically is, I think, a good thing. And yeah, that we don't align with corporations, and maybe we should also not align with political parties or any kind of state initiative. Yeah, basically here, this is very much, we could probably gain a lot of money and a lot of like visibility through aligning with the state, with political parties, but I don't think that would basically align our means and goals very much if we did. So I think there's like a positive change already in this kind of realization and this kind of split. So like we always like to say, oh yeah, if you have two left people meet, that there will be three splinter groups afterwards. But I actually think that's powerful in a way, because it also means that we can critically reflect and adjust to local conditions and needs. And I hope this continues. I hope there's a lot of more splintering here. And I think just in general, when I look at this whole community, I think there's a lot of good things. Like when we look at the Fediverse, it's wholly decentralized. It's offered for free for people by just some random people hosting servers in their cellars, or the same for Matrix. I don't know, I never had to pay to use any of these, even though, and I don't have to pay for them with my data either, which is like the important distinction. And we are offering, at least the Fediverse is also being accepted by not just techies. Matrix still is, and I know why, but yeah, I think there's like powerful nodes in this kind of technology where you don't have to pay, but you can contribute. If you have the privilege to host this, or if you have the privilege to donate money, for example, also to projects like Codeberg, you can do it. But if you don't, you still get to participate. And if we look at the free open source community in general, I don't want to make this generalization because I don't know most of the community that well, but I think the ecosystem in the whole is, well, people are contributing because they have the power to do so, the privilege to do so, and it's a gift to everyone else. And there's no obligation to it. So you get to use it, but you're not forced to do anything. And I think these are kind of like these anarchist roots there, because there's no power relation between anyone, and everyone kind of can choose autonomously what they want and what they need. Yeah, so we have seen these seeds, and I think we have also seen what's missing. And I think from that, maybe we can see already where we should be going. I think first, I'm very unhappy with the term of independence. I think this kind of independence kind of means that you try to get yourself rid of all relations to others. But obviously that's not what we are doing, and maybe that's also not what we want to do. I think what we want is that people have the power to choose themselves, to have the education and skills and support of others to choose who they want to relate to on their own. And I think maybe that's where we want to move. But maybe that's just me being nitpicky. I think we want to move away from any kind of nationalist tech or capitalist tech. I think there is already, we see it in the Fediverse and Matrix and other projects, that it's possible to have technology free of state, free of capital, and still free to use. And based on the idea that we trust the people who host it, rather than we trust some kind of vague data protection law that will be changed the moment AI enters the field or the police wants more ability to enforce power over us. I think that we don't want to just take over the means of technology, the means of production, yeah, something like that. We don't want to just reproduce the technologies and power structures from the old world and now put a socialist or anarchist label on it, but we want to maybe rethink how we use technologies and how they affect social relations. I think it's always important to consider that technology influences how our socials are formed, and so the socials inform how our technologies are formed. And the current technologies are predominantly created by capitalist interests. So we have to be extremely critical of every technology that we use, which is exhausting, but also we see, like with some of the technologies we are using nowadays, that it's possible to act differently and relate differently. And we are already doing this. We are already doing a lot of these things in small parts, in some spaces. And maybe instead of operating on these sovereign clouds, which just means that Dieter Schwarz gets to control your data, we can move further towards these sustainable decentralized infrastructures. For example, there's a lot of nice projects like Digital Courage hosts random stuff. If we go in Karlsruhe, there's multiple event calendars that are just hosted by people, for people, like Karlsunruhe and Keep Karlsruhe Boring. I think there was a talk yesterday too. And that's kind of the technologies that don't produce these power structures, that don't create this kind of consumer and producer differentiation, because everyone can do both and is enabled to do both. I watched a talk, Keep Karlsruhe Boring, yesterday on a video, on a stream because I didn't manage to get there. But basically what Victor said there was, he is not a techie at all, but he still hosted it. And right, I think there's like, we can get rid of this kind of pure expert mindset. Like, you don't have to be a full-on techie to contribute to this at all. So I think this is possible and it's already happening. And finally, I think what this all basically leads to is kind of these communities that are hopefully very diverse and mutualistic and horizontal. Because once we get rid of the state and capital, once people are empowered to act on their own but also support each other, once people have the ability to create their own decentralized infrastructures that are hopefully also based on hardware that is not as extractive, but I think this is much too big of a picture, honestly, for the ideas, then we can have this better world. So some closing thoughts. I didn't do the animation correctly. Anyway, I think we're already starting. I think we just have to constantly ask ourselves if what we are doing is aligned with where we want to go. And sometimes it really isn't. I think if we look at like how we treat marginalized groups and how we do our outreach, we are definitely not there yet. I don't think we talk enough with people that are affected by technology but don't have the knowledge and power currently themselves to do it, and we should be gifting this power to other people, to other groups, based on their needs and not of what we think is right. But at the same time, there's already good seeds. So I think do the things that are good more and stop doing the bad things as much. And maybe as an idea, what we are trying to do now is we want to kind of go and talk with climate activists soon at the system change camp and kind of bring these DI Day concepts in a different shape into this discussion with people who have other perspectives. And if you want to do that with us, just write me a message. We are already like 6 people, I think, who want to contribute there, but we would be happy for other contributions. And thank you for listening.
Thank you, Alexandra. We do have time for Q&A, so if anyone has questions, just raise your hand and I'll come get you with the second mic so the live stream can also hear your questions. And yeah, let's see what we have in the audience.
What's the most common type of request that you get or problem to solve at one of these DI days?
I think there is, surprisingly, one is the smartphone one. So basically, hey, how do I get an alternative smartphone OS? Because I think it makes a lot of sense because most people don't actually use computers that much. Their digital life is on their phones. And it's also the biggest surveillance tools that we have in our pockets right now. So I think it's interesting that people have this awareness. But also we don't have good answers to that because it's so bound in the hardware that we use. So we can't really answer that other by the take that, oh yeah, buy a Google Pixel. And that's the wrong answer, honestly. So yeah, I think that's the most common one that I got myself. I think because no one else knew how to answer it either.
Are you worried about the project of DI Day and, you know, of a utopian anarchist future stalling because we are perhaps trying to chase a perfect future rather than like making incremental steps? I feel like there's a lot of like shaming against attempts at like moving forward. And even in your very last comment about like, oh, you just have to buy a Google Pixel. And actually, no, that's the wrong answer. So then we should just, what, do nothing. I mean, I do feel like even just encouraging people to explore different Android ROMs or like look at the apps they have installed, like there are options that we can take. And I even encourage people to like duct tape together self-hosted solutions on like really crappy hardware you find in your basement. And then I hear people in communities being like, no, 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 we need a Kubernetes install to help this like, you know, geographically distributed Nextcloud instance. No, like it's actually, it's shaming people away from these answers. And I'm worried that we're doing a lot of like nitpicking and perfectionism that's not actually helping us move forward. But then like, even in your presentation, you were talking about how like small incremental change is actually just like the capitalist project. And like, it's like, yeah, but like, I don't know. I'm worried that we will end up not having fertile ground to have these seeds grow. Like it will just stall. I don't know if you've...
I think I agree with you. I think this nuance was lacking in my talk. I think we need to make these small steps. We need to make errors. We can't destroy ourselves over being perfect. But I think it's a good question to ask just... So first, I fully agree with you, okay? I think there is like... If we just stay at being happy with good enough every time, if we are always happy to just do these small steps and never think about where these steps should lead us, I think that's where this utopian thinking comes in, that these small steps are actually going in the right direction. But yeah, we should still make small steps, and we will sometimes walk in the wrong direction, but we should then always just critically ask ourselves, when we make these small steps, are they actually doing what we wanted to do in the long term? And yeah, I think we need to have both. I think that's kind of the point. Thank you.
First of all, thank you for the talk. I think that you asked a lot of good questions and did a quite good analysis of the situation. I for myself like to think that getting people on just different technologies, like not the same technology, but different companies, that already weakens the singularity, the power of the centralized one service. Yeah. And I agree that it's not the answer to just replace with another company's system. But what I really like about the D-Days is that apart from just trying to get them, trying to change the technology people use, you at the same time have what I like about anarchism. You show people that cooperation is better than working against each other.
Yeah.
And so to me, D-Days are not only about having people using other stuff, but giving them the experience on which they can like proceed and maybe organize their non-technology life, because they feel and see that it's a good thing to work together. Do you experience it that way too?
Yeah, I think that's a great way to put it. I feel like when we come up together for these DI days, it's often that we are just kind of gifting each other this time and intention and support. And that's already so different to how usually IT support kind of is like this client, this kind of customer mindset where we are like consultants or like we are the experts telling everyone. And usually what ends up happening at DCI days is that we just sit down together and have these very earnest discussions. And I think there's already this kind of better world that we want to have in these small parts. Yeah. I mean, I think I talked about this because it's important to me. I see a lot of good in it, but then the talk itself ended up being mostly bashing it.
Okay, so thanks again, Alexandra, for the talk. Give a warm welcome.